right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes at home, Gord Miller in studio.
So I just got to say, so we have a clean feed of your camera here in the studio. So we could see you for the last 20 minutes getting ready for the show. And I'm sitting there going, because I put on a golf shirt today. You know, I thought, I'm going to be on TV. And Hayes has got this T-shirt on. I'm thinking, about, wow, like, I'm doing Overdrive. I guess I can do that. Then he throws for the radio audience at like 30 seconds to air. Hayes throws on the blazer
just to keep it clean.
So you just,
it's a very professional show.
So you went from like 20K to 120K, just blazer on, ready to go
in 30 seconds. Yeah. And so I got to be honest,
I got to remember that. So I'm going to wear the T-shirt tomorrow or Thursday.
Yeah,
bring the blazer,
throw it on. It's all good. No one knows any better. I was actually in a bit of a daze over here. I've been doing the show from home for so long, and I have no one to kind of poke and prod and say we're up. Where if I'm in the studio, you know, Mullen's in there with you. Al's brother's probably lurking around. Generally speaking, the grappler would be in there. And if I'm in there during the season, you know, O's in there, Noodles is in there. I got clocks everywhere. I know what's up. Today, for whatever reason, I was just kind of staring into the abyss, and I snapped out of it. I looked down at my computer. It said 3:59. So you thought I was cool, calm, and collected, and everything came together at the right time.
Yeah.
I easily could have been staring there, and all of a sudden show's on and you're alone, Garth Algar.
I got to be honest with you, Brian. You were staring into the abyss. We were staring at your ass. You had your back turned to the camera for a good 5 minutes there.
Yeah.
So we were kind of,
That makes sense. I got the shorts on, the slippers on. Yeah. So I got the mullet look, man. It's all business up top, and it's a party down below, and usually I'm out there chipping balls or trying to roll some balls and trying to work on my short game as much as possible. And I was doing that a little bit earlier on. But I think I'm prepped. I think I'm good to go. We had a little powwow. We talked when you were on the way in.
I was stuck in the traffic on the way in, So we had a good discussion. Don't want to leave it in the green room, though, right? You don't want to – you're big on that. Like, you never want to, like, leave it kind of – before the show.
No, I don't want to overanalyze. Yeah. I want it to be completely spontaneous. I think that is the magic of the show, actually, that works so well.
Is there magic?
I'm not sure there actually is, but somehow they allow us to continue to be on the air. I guess that's the best way to phrase it.
That is magical.
For whatever reason, TSN continues to say, we will give you access to the airwaves, and if you want to use it, go ahead and use it. So we continue to do it. And the way we generally operate, like when it's Owen Noodles and I, especially from home, there is no contact. Like we have no contact beforehand.
Do you know? I did a game with Ray Ferraro like that this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we were under the NHL protocols for games on the road. So I flew to Edmonton. The keys were in the rental car when I got there. I drove to the hotel. I checked in. Ray and I talked a little bit on the phone that night. You stay in your room the whole day. The next day, there's no morning skate. I think we texted a little bit. We walked to the rink. It was in Edmonton. We walked to the rink at like 6:30. That was the first time we talked face-to-face, like, the whole time.
Right. That's it. And then next thing you know, the game's happening.
But we don't do that. When we do games, we don't sit there, oh, let's say this, let's say that, let's talk about this. I mean, there's stuff that the producer has some stuff they've got rolled in, like the last time they played or, you know, this guy had a hat trick on this day, whatever. But I shouldn't say – I mean, it's very important stuff that our producer does and we value it highly. So I shouldn't say just whatever. But, we don't – Ray and I don't really –
But how can you, though? Like, the game is going to play out. You can't predict the way the game is going to play out.
I've worked with producers who literally, we called it game in a briefcase. Like, they showed up and said, here's what's going to be in the opening. Then the first break, we're going to do this. And the first whistle, we're going to do this. And I remember one time we were doing a game, and it was all, we were doing a Detroit game. And it was all about Detroit this, Detroit that, Detroit this. And I said, you know, they're down 2-0, right? Like, we can't.
Right, exactly.
You gotta let the game. That's why I don't like to do predictions, to be honest with you.
Well, how would that affect what you do, though, with play by play?
I don't want to have a preconceived notion about the game. I don't want to go in and think, oh, I thought this is going to happen, so that happened. I want to go in and just anything can happen. Be prepared for whatever comes. Don't have a preconceived notion of what's going to happen.
I think that actually that makes a lot of sense. I think that's probably a good way of going about it from your perspective, because you've called so many different games, so many different levels, so many different teams, so many different players, and you've got an idea of what the team makeup is and what individual players are going to look like, but you don't know how they're going to play that night. Right. You know, if you're watching a Jay game last night, you're probably prepping, thinking big ball game. They're coming off a sweep. They just swept Texas. They're coming home. They got to get it tonight. They're down 6-0 after the first.
So
who cares about the rest of the plans? The game's over. You're getting smoked.
I did a Jays game years ago. I used to do the Blue Jays, you know, like 10 times a year. I did a Jays game against Tampa. And now both teams were not good at this point. And Tampa's starting pitcher had not gone more than 6 innings all year. He had the worst ERA in the American League. He led the American League in home runs allowed. So I'm not an experienced baseball broadcaster, so I've got all this stuff ready on what a terrible pitcher this guy is and how he's historically bad. He was Tom Seaver that day. Mm-hmm. He throws like a 2-hit shutout, strikes out 9, and I have nothing with me to indicate that he's ever done anything good. Now, he's a big league pitcher, so obviously he has. But, yeah, so you go into these games, you're thinking, oh, yeah, like this guy's going to be a star. Or that I like to bet. Bets are different than predictions.
Yes, absolutely are.
Betting is different than predicting. Those are two very different things because betting is probability.
Well, and especially if you're talking about a point spread, like if you're calling a football game,
right?
You're not. I don't care if the team wins or loses as long as you cover the number. Right. You know, like it's completely irrelevant.
And
to
also,
me.
If I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to beat Jacksonville, but someone offers me 30-1 odds that Jacksonville win the game, I might take that bet.
Of course. You'd be crazy not to at 30-1.
Doesn't mean I think Jacksonville's going to win.
No. But taking a flyer on guys, it happens. You know, that's the beauty of sports. At some point, those games are going to come in. And we're getting closer with the NFL season. Rookies have reported, I think, 4 different camps throughout the NFL have rookies already there, officially showing up. By the end of this week, rookies throughout the NFL will have arrived. And all the vets are going to be there. Hopefully all the vets.
All of them? Because I noticed,
potentially not.
Again, for the radio audience, in the background of Brian Hayes' shot here is a Green Bay Packers helmet, a Green Bay Packers logo. And is that an Aaron Rodgers bobblehead back there?
Actually, that's a Doug Flutie where you and I were calling that. Remember, we were down at BMO for Doug Flutie's night.
Yeah.
Doug came by and hung out with us a few summers ago.
So is Aaron Rodgers going to be in camp?
I'm getting a little bit concerned. I have to be honest with you, Gordon.
a little concerned? Because it might be past time to be a little concerned.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little bit concerned. And I've been saying this consistently for quite some time. I do think we're going to know how principled he is, how stubborn he is, as of day one of camp, because the quarterback, if your quarterback is not in camp, you do not have camp up and running.
No.
You can't.
No, like, because it's the whole thing.
The whole thing revolves around him. Everything revolves around QB1. Like, if it's an injury, then that's different. Clearly, you're preparing for that. You know he's not going to be ready. This is not an injury. This is simply, is he going to show or is he not going to show? And Adam Schefter of ESPN reported earlier today that during this offseason, the Packers offered Rodgers a 2-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for 5 more seasons and made him the highest-paid quarterback and player in football. He declined the offer, and as Schefter points out, proof, it's not about money. I think at some point it will become about money. If he decides to show up and get there, that contract's still going to be on the table. Rodgers knows it. If it was offered to him 2 months ago, and he declined it, he can call up today and say, put it back on the table, I'll sign it, and I'll show up day one of camp. But if he's principled, if he's stubborn, if he's made up his mind and he's going to stick to it, I think we'll find out the next week or so. Because if he's not there day one, why show up a day before the season? What are you proving at that point? You know, what comes with – then you're sewering your teammates. And by all accounts, what has been consistent throughout this, whether it's Rodgers, his camp, publicly or leaking it through the media, he has a gripe with the president and a gripe with the GM. It doesn't sound like he's got a big issue with Matt LaFleur.
No.
Didn't love not going for it on fourth down against the Bucs in the NFC title game. But doesn't have a huge issue with LaFleur. Doesn't have an issue at all with the rest of his teammates.
Does he have an issue with Green Bay?
I don't see why you would or why you could at this point. He's a god in Green Bay. Yes, he's a California guy, but he's been there his whole career. Been there for 15 years. Now all of a sudden you don't like a small town? Like what would have changed between last offseason and this one where now he can't handle it?
Hosting Jeopardy.
Well, I mean, listen, he's engaged now to a celebrity, I believe, an actress, and maybe that's drawing him away from a smaller town. Maybe he wants the bright lights of somewhere else. But the bright lights of the NFL Lambeau Field is in that conversation. I mean, that's the mecca. And it's as close to as it gets.
And there is something to be said, you know, and he had a front row seat for how it ended for Brett Favre.
Yep. Benefited greatly with the way it ended.
And actually did benefit from it. You're right. There is something to be said for, you know, finishing your career where it started, for being, you know, that iconic. But I mean, there's more. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers doesn't need validation for his career. No matter what happens, it's a Hall of Fame career, and he's. Mm-hmm. But I would think you would look at what happened with Brett Favre and say, yeah, I don't want that for myself.
I would agree with you, Gord, and the way that Favre left and the acrimony that came with it, and quite frankly, the fan base turned on him. And now I think the fans are starting to turn on Rodgers, myself included here.
Yeah.
Like, what is the issue? What is so big of a deal? Okay, they took Jordan Love and didn't call you. Get over it, man. Like, you're still the number one guy. They're putting this on the table.
And to your point, you went to the NFC Championship game. It's not like you're playing for a bad team.
I could understand.
It's not like you can't win. Like if you're sitting in Green Bay and they had 6 wins last year, and you're thinking, you know, I'd like one more shot at the Super Bowl. You know, I'd like out. I can see that, but he's not going to go to a situation that I could think of that would give him a measurably better chance to win.
No, he won't.
I mean, well, I guess if you go. If you want to go to New England, I guess, but I
don't think New England's better than Green Bay. They're
probably
not.
Who is?
No, I honestly can't picture a team out there.
There is a team that might be, but they already have a quarterback. His name's Tom Brady.
Right, and that I think does factor into his issue at this point is he wants the Brady treatment, where Brady showed up and said, "Go get Leonard Fournette, go get Antonio Brown, go get this guy, go get that guy," and they did it, and that has never happened with Rodgers in Green Bay. That was part of the issue, I think, with Brady in New England, is that they never strayed from their philosophy for Tom. They weren't willing to do it. They continued to build through the draft and make sure that their cap was in a state of flux or in a state of flexibility. Yeah. And now Brady goes down there. He does what he does. Rodgers probably wants the same treatment. He's not getting it. That is part of the issue. But you can't, to your point, argue if you're Aaron Rodgers that the Packers are wasting your career. They've been to back-to-back NFC championship teams. They got arguably the best left tackle in football, arguably the best wide receiver in football, a top 5 running back in football, a really quality defense. What's the issue here? You know, in a division that's not so great, you're probably going to run off 12 or 13 wins again. So he's got to figure it out, and the Packers have to figure it out, because if he's not there and he's principled enough not to show up and he's not going to be dealt, which I don't picture happening this late into the offseason, then he's just going to sit at home. Then I guess Jordan Love is playing, or Blake Bortles is playing.
So,
and that is not going to be a good scene for the Packers.
So the thing I don't like, Brian, I have no issue with a guy who's going to be a free agent leaving. You've earned that right. You go. I don't like it when you're under contract and you don't report. I have an issue with that. And to the point you made about Packer fans being upset, you signed a contract. And so now, if something happened during the course of that contract that you just can't stomach – for whatever reason, malfeasance, whatever, that I can see it. But I'm not happy is not an answer for getting out of a contract.
Contracts are so complicated, though, in the NFL.
Yeah.
So it is different in the NFL.
They can be restructured all the time.
They can be. And in a lot of ways, the players have to demand it if they're on a contract that just is not applicable to where they are in terms of their status in the league. So I think I agree with you in terms of basically any other league. The NFL is different. I do think it comes with a caveat that the way that the contracts are structured, I can understand why guys, and the nature of the sport, where it's such a physical sport, it's a short-lived career.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get it while you can, and it's not guaranteed contracts. Like, the NFL and their contract structure is so much different than everywhere else. But as you look at what's going on in the NHL right now, like, expansion is such a weird experience. You know, like, if you're a player, there's video out right now of the Seattle Kraken doing, you know, the fish tossing thing.
For the Pike Market, yeah.
Yeah, the big market that they have. And it's gone viral. It's out there. And I think Kevin Weeks is actually involved in it. And it's announcing that the Kraken take Alex Kerfoot of the Maple Leafs.
Right.
And I think a lot of people in the league are expecting Kerfoot to go. Yeah. So I think there's something to this. Seattle's trying to get out in front of it, say, actually, we did this for a bunch of different options and a bunch of different picks. I think it's Kerfoot. I think Kerfoot's probably going. I think that would suggest why the Leafs went out and got McCann, because I think they know Kerfoot's going.
This happened at the NHL draft a few years ago, Brian, when we were doing it. We did a run-through, and we said, you know, so-and-so had the first pick, and they picked so – you know, we projected who they're going to – we just picked a name. And I was, well, TSN knows who's getting picked. It's actually going to be this guy. We were just doing a run-through. Like, it, you know.
So, yeah, I mean – Maybe it is. Maybe it is just something that leaked for whatever reason. But let's say it is Kerfoot, and I think you can.
I think it probably is. Yeah,
I think it probably is. If you're Kerfoot, you get traded from Colorado to Toronto. You immediately accept a new deal, and now you're just in Seattle because some guy showed up with $600 million and said, "I'm in the league now."
And your team decided that you weren't valuable enough to protect.
Right now, you're leaving now, and you're going somewhere else.
So, yeah, but that is the nature of the sport. Kerfoot could just as easily have been traded at any point this summer. He doesn't have any kind of trade protection.
No.
He doesn't warrant that. I mean, I shouldn't say he doesn't warrant. He doesn't have it. So, I mean, he's not entitled to that. So that could happen at any moment. It happens a lot less in some other sports. You know, NFL teams don't make trades nearly as much as teams in other leagues do. So I don't see the difference. To be honest, you know the expansion draft's coming. You know you're unprotected, so you know what's a possibility. Mm-hmm. As opposed to waking up one morning, you know, brushing your teeth, get a call from the GM, yeah, you're going to Anaheim, and you don't see it coming. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I would say that I don't think...
You can brace for it, and Kerfoot probably knows
I don't think Kerfoot's going to be blindsided
if
Seattle takes him on Wednesday.
I think it's in the best interest of Ron Francis and company to probably reach out to the players beforehand. I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but if you give the agent a heads up, you know, it's coming.
I think a number of players have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. Because certainly the Kraken have been able to talk to any restricted or unrestricted free agents who aren't protected. Right? So they're able to talk to them. And so the agent would have a sense of who they like and who they don't like.
Do you like this move from a Maple Leaf perspective in terms of the options available?
Yeah, I do.
And that means Dermott's sticking around. If Kerfoot goes, that means Travis Dermott is still here.
Yeah, I got no problem with that. I think, you know, I mean, look, the Leafs have other issues besides that. I think they've covered themselves well enough to make up for the potential loss of Kerfoot, or have given Seattle another option to take someone else. You know, I think we get – in hockey, we get too worried about some of these moves that are sort of lateral. At the end of the day, the questions for the Leafs aren't about Alex Kerfoot versus Jared McCann. That's not the key. Those aren't in the top 10 list of questions for the Leafs. That's not on it.
No, it's not. But I think the depth of the team is a part of the conversation and where.
Well, the depth on the wing is a bigger issue. Well,
absolutely. Kerfoot was going to probably play on the wing this year.
Not Zach Hyman.
No, he's not.
So what are the biggest issues for the Leafs? Number one, in my mind, what's going to happen with Hyman? Number two, if he goes, what do you do to replace him? Number three, they've got to answer questions on their defense. A bunch of them. Number one, is Morgan Rielly going to stay or go? Are you signing to an extension? Are you letting them play it out? Or do you move him now? And what are they doing to backup goaltender? Because Jack Campbell had a great year. He's never started more than 26 games in a season. That was 2 years ago. So say he starts 52 next year. Just say he starts 52 games next year. Your backup's still got to play 30 games.
I think that's the number one issue.
So if you want to make that the number one issue?
Oh, I think it is.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it's indisputable.
You could rank it any way you want.
I don't think he can.
But the Kerfoot thing is way below that.
You're right, but it all of the pieces are important in terms of putting the puzzle together.
Yeah.
I guess
And they don't have a lot of cap space.
So this would open some of it. If Kerfoot goes, you bring in McCann, you're saving $600,000 just based on those two players. But I think the goaltending, the Seattle distraction has been an understandable one. It's a captivating one. It's one that I'm intrigued by. I've talked a lot about on the show. But I think when the dust settles, there will come a time where more people in the city and more people following the team, and I know it's still happening, will realize the conundrum in net. and how high of a priority it is. It is the number one priority. They have got to get someone who can play. It cannot be a conventional backup who can give you 20 games. I don't trust Campbell enough, and I don't think the Leafs should.
So that's,
I think they'd be crazy to trust him for 55 games.
That's
and
expensive.
Think it's going to happen.
That's expensive, Brian.
That's fine.
So here's the thing. We're in for quite a week, and it's going to be like a snowball here. We're going to have the Seattle expansion draft tomorrow. On Thursday, the trade freeze comes off the day before the draft. So the trade and signing freeze comes off on Thursday. There's going to be a ton of deals Thursday. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a ton of trades on Thursday. And then at the draft, there's always trades at the draft. There's going to be a bunch of deals at the draft. We're also going to find out tomorrow night about the deals that Seattle has made. Remember, Vegas made 10 of them before their expansion.
Right.
We're going to find out tomorrow what the trades are that Seattle has made.
Well, you got to believe that they're wheeling and dealing to an extent. I'm not sure it'll be the same as Vegas because, you know, Vegas fleeced the whole league,
well,
essentially.
They did and they didn't. Yes, they did. I don't think teams will make the same number of deals like Minnesota did. Here's Alex Tuch. Take Eric Howland in the expansion draft instead of Matt Dumba. Mm-hmm. And they made four or five deals like that. They did take on four contracts. Vegas took on four contracts in those 10 deals, right? They took on Jason Garrison from Tampa. They took on Clarkson from Columbus. They took on Fleury from Pittsburgh. And they took on Grabowski from the Islanders. I think that's all. Mm-hmm. But back then, not nearly as many teams were capped out as there are now. The flat cap has put two-thirds of the league in a cap jam. I think where Seattle can really pounce is to take more contracts. So Tampa's got to unload at least three. Mm-hmm. So does Seattle take two of them for first-round picks and prospects? I think Seattle, in a sense, has a chance to prosper more than Vegas did in terms of futures for taking on contracts.
That's an interesting thought, and I could see them circling the wagon on a number of teams, for sure.
There's so many teams.
And that's why they don't take Price.
There are teams that would like to unload contracts in the past. There are a dozen teams this year that have to unload contracts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they simply have to get rid of some contracts because they can't ice a team unless they play a bunch of guys they got a bunch of guys named Ted and Pete, you know, on their third and fourth lines and their second and third pairs on D and in goal. So there's too many teams in a cap jam. And Seattle, really, like, if you want to put it this way, you know, the waters are rising and Seattle's got the exclusive lifeboat concession.
Like, they do, although if you're taking on guys that are actually going to play as opposed to, like, long-term IR.
Well, no, but you take on a contract. No, but you take on a contract, then buy the guy out.
I suppose you could do that.
Some teams can't even afford to buy players out. Like Tampa can't afford to buy guys out.
Right, because it's still a percentage of the cap.
It's still a shot in your cap. So they can't do that. So Seattle, short term, for the next 3-4 years, has flexibility.
Right. And now, again, it depends on how quickly they want to get to the cap, how quickly they think they can compete, what they take from the Vegas experience from that standpoint. But, yes, I think that is a very viable option for them and one that they should be exploring and hoping to exploit. But, you know, if you're bringing in guys that you – like Tyler Johnson's an example. Do you buy him out or does he play? If he plays, that's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, but they can afford it. They could afford to have.
They can, but
they can afford to have Tyler Johnson. I
mean, okay, but if you take him and then buy out two or three other guys, Gord, all of a sudden you're like, what are we doing here?
I mean, Vegas was nowhere near the cap until year three,
and now they've blown past it.
Now they're in the glue like everyone else. Now they've been really good. They've been a really good team, and it's worth it for them. But I mean, Seattle's probably 2-3 years away from even being close to the cap.
I would think so.
They're not going to have. I mean, unless they take Price, which I don't think they'll do. I mean, they could still have one $10 million player and not be in any kind of cap jeopardy at all.
Right.
They're not going to have a bunch of $8, $7, $6 million contracts.
Well, those guys aren't available right now unless they want to trade for them or if they want to sign UFAs right now, which I don't know if the free agents are looking to go there anyway at this point.
Right.
But we'll get into this more. Eddie Olczyk coming
up. We got to talk about Tom Brady, too.
We'll get into Tom Brady and the Bucks. They were down at the White House and confirm or deny still to come later this afternoon. We got Steve Phillips coming up as well. The Jays are back in action tonight. Thomas Hatch on the mound for the Jays. There's an update on Nate Pearson. We'll tell you about that. Chicken strips got lit up last night. Raw chicken strips. That was just not appropriately cooked. It didn't work out well for chicken strips and the boys last night. I'll tell you more about that, Gord. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Steve Phillips will join us here in a moment. Our Jays and MLB analyst. The Jays, they got rocked last night.
Yeah.
Like it was such a positive evening going into the game. The announcement over the weekend that they're coming home. They'll be here on July 30th. 15,000 people in attendance. I believe there's a hope and a legitimate belief that you could have a packed house come September. They were 2.5 out of the wild card spot. Big series in Buffalo to wrap things up against the Boston Red Sox, and it was over after the first inning. It was 6-0 after the first inning. They got their doors blown off last night, and Ross Stripling really struggled. But he came out afterwards and supplied, I think, an understandable and reasonable explanation for where he's at and where he was at last night, and one that I had not thought of because we're so focused about the Toronto side of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming home, and, of course, you're comfortable, and everyone wants to be here. But he said, I didn't have my stuff. I guess a team like that, it's going to do damage. But furthermore, I was having a tough time knowing that with the news of us going back to Toronto, I'm leaving my wife and kids behind. I guess they're not coming up. So that is not an angle I really had thought of, Gord.
No, you know? And you know what? And I'm going to sound like an apologist for professional athletes, which is an almost impossible position to take. But they are human beings. Brian, I did two bubbles last year. I was in the NHL bubble in Toronto. I was at the World Junior bubble over Christmas. No one wants to hear about how difficult that is emotionally to be locked in that bubble. I mean, hey, Gord, you were at the Royal York Hotel for 40 days. That sounds like I'll take that. Yeah, you might. And these guys make millions of dollars, and there's all of that that goes with it. I get it. But I don't care what you do for a living and how much you make. It's not easy to leave your family.
No, and it can affect the outcome,
Brian,
and the production.
Yeah, Brian, I've worked every Christmas for 26 years. It's not easy to go. Sometimes your family comes, sometimes they don't. When they don't, it's not easy. I love it, what I do. It's part of the deal. So I think what's interesting about that comment to me is that he was so honest about it. And think about another guy who made an honest comment in Buffalo. Remember Ryan O'Reilly at the end of the year saying that, you know, all the losing had kind of destroyed his enjoyment of the game, that it had worn him down. Tons of players feel that way.
Well,
they just don't say it.
Let's bring in Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Steve, you've been a GM before. If you're Ross Atkins last night and it's a big game and Stripling gets rocked and you hear him come out with that kind of honesty post-game, how do you react?
So I react with compassion, but in my mind I'm thinking – that's not how we talk about things here, because
right,
as soon as you make it a big deal, it becomes a bigger deal. And, you know, one of the reasons why the Blue Jays have dealt with the adversity that they have is that they haven't let it get to them. They haven't let it bother them. They've just persevered through it. They acted like, you know what, you know, we're just going to play wherever they tell us to play. We're going to go play. We're going to go do it. As soon as you start to make it a big deal, it's like saying, you know, when your team's not hitting with runners in scoring position, as soon as you start making it a big deal, it makes it that much worse because you're thinking about it. You're trying too hard. I 100% agree that the Blue Jays have had the toughest hand to deal with. There's no question. They've been dealt the toughest hand. But the reason that they've performed and gotten through it is because they've minimized the issue. And yes, it is a big deal, but I would have preferred him to be more honest after he pitched well than after he pitched poorly, because it certainly bothers guys. As professionals, you have to put it aside. You have to just, you know, leave that stuff at the door, and it's a hard thing to do. And yet it's what you're trained to do as a baseball player, is you don't bring that stuff to the ballpark with you. And you don't use it as the disclaimer for any performance. And so it's true. They've been dealt. They've had the hardest hand to deal with. But you know, the reason it hasn't dominated them is that they haven't made it such a big deal. So, yes, I appreciate the honesty, and I believe that that's wearing on him. But I also don't look at it and believe it was the cause of, you know, a six-run first inning.
So that was a bit of a rude awakening for the Jays last night, who were feeling good coming off that Rangers series where they beat them 25-2 over three games. They were 2.5 out of the wild card last night, chasing Oakland. And you got three at home in Buffalo against Boston. You got four at Fenway next week. and the game's over after the first, and the Sox did what they've done a few times this year, the Jays, and made it clear that there is a bit of a discrepancy. But how big of a discrepancy? Where do you see the Jays and the Sox, and I guess you can include Tampa in this, you know, should the Jays be simply focusing on catching the wild card, or do you think the division is still within reach?
I think they can still get the division. I do. I think the Red Sox are going to fall back to the pack. You know, one thing about the Red Sox is I think they've only used six starters all year, and one of them has pitched like twice. I mean, they've only had, I think, two games that they've not used one of their five starters, and one was a doubleheader game. I mean, they've had a remarkable run. And the thing about their pitching is it's not great, but it's never bad. You know, they don't have that third of an inning game. Their guys may pitch to a 4-plus ERA, but when you always pitch to that and it's not, you're getting there by pitching to a 2 ERA one day and a 6 ERA the next day where you deliver the clunker, but you're just always okay, then that wins a lot of games. Mediocre starting pitching, but it's consistently mediocre, allows you to slug your way, and then if your bullpen does a good job, you can hold the lead or hold the deficit to let your offense come back. That's been their formula. There's nothing special about their starting pitching. And so it's actually what the Red Sox are doing is the methodology of the what the Blue Jays need to do. They don't need – I mean, it's nice to get seven innings and one run given up. But, you know, seven innings and four runs given up is still worth winning that game. And you can win that game. And so you know, I think that the Red Sox at some point are going to have to deal with some adversity like everybody else has with the when it comes to health. And they haven't had to deal with it all that much. And so, you know, the wear and tear of the season, the inevitability of injuries that can take place. And so, you know, there is a real good chance the Red Sox are going to have to go through some of that and could fall back to the pack a bit. And I think the Jays need to just keep winning series. Especially when you're playing the head-to-head series. So, you know, you lose the first game of the series, you've got to bounce back. Doesn't matter the score of that first game of the series. Let them get it all out in the first game and then come back after that and win. The Manoah injury, you know, falling, slipping down the steps in the dugout hurts a bit because he would be starting today. And now they're going to count on Thomas Hatch, who's got a good arm, and he could go out there and pitch a good game. But I sure would like to have seen Manoah against them in this matchup. So, They just got to win series and hope that the Red Sox lose series, and they can certainly get back into that division race.
Steve, do you think the Jays pitching is good enough to keep to win enough of those series to catch a wild card without doing anything at the deadline? Is their pitching good enough?
Well, they need a lot to go right, and timing will matter. Now, you know, the thing for the Blue Jays, you look at them, they've got the biggest run differential in the division. Which means that the reason they aren't leading the division is because the timing of their run differential versus the Red Sox. So the Red Sox, you know, they crushed the Blue Jays, but, you know, if they're winning, they're winning 7-5, you know, that sort of thing, where the Blue Jays will win 10-4 and they'll lose, you know, 5-3. You know, it's always a close game, and they've played the fewest one-run games in baseball. So if the timing is right, they can win with this staff, but you can't rely upon that to make it up and get even it out a bit. So I think they need to improve it. But the Red Sox pitching is not that much better than the Blue Jays pitching. They just had better timing on the way that they performed. And you know, part of that's just happenstance, right? It's not like you could pick your day that somebody's up or down. But they're good enough to compete, because nobody has great pitching other than maybe the Rays are pretty good, but they don't hit as much as others. But I do think that you know, an improvement in their starting rotation, an improvement at the end of the game, and they can start to make up some of that ground in the division.
With our Jays and MLB analyst Steve Phillips, Jays back in action tonight, game two of their series against the Sox. Thomas Hatch making his debut as a starter tonight in place of Alek Manoah. And there's some news in terms of younger pitchers, and Nate Pearson in particular came out about an hour ago that he's been dealing with a sports hernia issue. So he's going to start building up his arm again, but he's simply a bullpen option. I'm sure they're hoping he gets up here at some point and can factor into the bullpen down the stretch. But I'm starting to get concerned here about where this guy stands in terms of the organization, but also just in terms of his own path. He's had so many injuries. When he has come up, he has not looked good. He has not looked comfortable. if he is becoming more of a bullpen option, he cannot be considered a number one prospect. Like, I'm not sure if you're a top five prospect, top 10 prospect. Like, what is Nate Pearson if he is more of a bullpen option than a long-term starting pitcher at this point?
Yeah, so I think that you know, there's short-term and long-term, you know, issues here. So in the short-term, I think it makes a lot of sense to you know, I was calling for that back in June. Put him in the bullpen, let him air it out, let him feel like, you know, as a reliever, they come in and they're aggressive, they pound the strike zone. Let him get back to that mentality of going at guys, use them in the bullpen where you can really use another arm, and then you can figure out at the end of the year about whether you want to stretch him back out again. It could be that with the sports hernia, you know, the six-inning start, seven-inning start may tax him a little bit more because the core is such an important part of a delivery of any baseball player, really, with that core is so critical to repeating your delivery. So maybe the intensity of a short spurt versus long starts would be the better way to go. I'm with you, though, that, you know, it's it's as a general manager, to be honest with you, what ends up happening is when you count on somebody and they don't deliver the way that you wanted, sometimes you get mad, and you've got to remind you. There's a level of anger that comes up, and you've got to think, wait, obviously he wants it more than I even want it. And, you know, we now have to make the best out of the situation. And just because, you know, whenever you have an expectation, it's a preconceived resentment. You know, like I have an expectation for you. If you don't live up to it, then I get angry about it. And that's not right necessarily. There's a lot that can go into it. So you've got to try to pull yourself back from that as a general manager to be able to have a clear perspective about what he's going to be in the future. And can he still get there? You know, nobody controls the injuries that somebody goes through. So I personally think that he can certainly still turn into a quality pitcher. A lot of guys have had injury problems early. He hasn't had the level of development that you might want because he was so good. You push him through, and then when he's not, or his injuries, and he starts to struggle, he doesn't have a whole lot to fall back on. I wouldn't want to give up on him, but if it was the right deal and I was getting the value for what I think he really is worth when he's healthy, I might include him in that trade.
Steve, do you see the Blue Jays? I mean, look, if you're looking for a closer, there's a real good one from the Cubs, right? Craig Kimbrell's as good as they come. Do you see the Jays being in that kind of market between now and the deadline?
Yeah, I don't. You know, it doesn't feel like the Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro way of doing it. You know, that they're going to go get the biggest guy out there. Because if, you know, the way I look at it, go get me Max Scherzer. He wants a contract extension. Give it to him. And go get Kimbrel. He's got another year on his deal for next year. And let's go. You know, let's get the ace, let's get the closer, and let's let this lineup thump a bit and bring in the intensity level those two guys bring, push everybody in the bullpen forward an inning. You know, when Merriweather and Romano and you know, you get everybody sort of in line there earlier in the game, it shortens the game for the pitchers that aren't as capable. It gives you Ryu, Scherzer, and Ray in a short series, and let's take our chances. Now, you know, and remember, Alex Anthopoulos found himself in this spot in 2015.
Right.
And their run differential was a plus 104, but they were just about a 500 team. And he said, I think we're better than those teams that are in front of us. Yes, we've got some ground to make up, but I think we should go for it because the run differential tells me we're a lot better than our record indicates. And he got Tulowitzki and Price. And then the rest is history. They end up making the run. He got, you know, depending upon what you believe, you know, Mark Shapiro didn't necessarily love that mentality of going all in that year, even though it worked, because it compromised the future of the organization. I can't imagine that that's what they're going to do because it seems counter to the position they had previously. But I got to tell you, it's something I would consider doing. Because if I can get Scherzer, and the way to get him is to give him the extension, and if I can get Kimbrel, even if it doesn't work for this year, I have him for next year. And so I'd be all in on two guys I can control who are veterans, who I can fit into my budget and still stay under the luxury tax threshold. Now that we're going back to Toronto, we're going to get, again, it's only 15,000 fans a game, but again, next year we're going to start to sell out the stadium, and we're going to be in an even better position then. And how could I ever get those two guys next year when I can get them for a playoff run this year and next year? I would take a shot at it.
Well, we had Shapiro on the show yesterday, and there was one phrase he used multiple times that would fit in line with everything you just detailed. When I was asking him about the approach to the deadline, he used the term, we are going to, quote, chase impact, end quote. So chasing impact is Scherzer, Kimbrel. It's not, you know, a guy.
Yeah.
That's chasing impact. So he's on record saying that on this show.
Right.
Take that for what it's worth, but impact is Scherzer and Kimbrel. That's what it is.
The other impact it could be is if you can't get the pitching that you want, Nelson Cruz is impact. Rental player, huge bat, you put him at DH, you know, it limits your ability to necessarily, you know, give Springer a day off and DH him, or Vlad a day off and DH him. But over the last 2 months of the season, maybe that's not as important to them. But here's the thing, you may want to give Nelson Cruz a day off here and there, but he's impact, right? If you can't get the pitching, then do you just stockpile your offense? Is there a way to do it? So there are other ways to do it. If you can't get the pitchers that are impact, there are other ways to add impact, even if you're improving an area of strength by doing it.
Well, we've got a couple of weeks to figure this out, less than that now, but they got to get back on the wagon tonight against the Red Sox, and we'll see what Hatch has in store, and we'll see where the rest of the series goes. Hey, always great catching up with you, Steve. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Next 10 days are going to be a blast before the deadline. A lot of big names moving.
It's going to be fun. You'll be all over it. As always, there he is, Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst, on TSN Radio all the time, on SportsCenter, TSN.ca. And he's right. The next 10 days are going to be pretty wild. And that was Shapiro yesterday, Gord, chasing impact. Now, he didn't say we're going to get impact. We're going to chase impact.
The problem is to get impact, you have to give up impact.
Yes, you do. Or potential impact. Not guaranteed impact.
Yes, but potential impact.
Potential impact.
This is pro sports is not a charity.
No, it's not. You got to pay to play. I think they feel like they got a good team. I think Atkins said earlier today it likely will not be addressing the rotation. I think they feel like they've got about what they can get, which maybe means Scherzer's not in the cards. But you call up the Cubs, and you need a third baseman, too. Desperately need a third baseman. Chris Bryant is impact. Kimbrel is impact. Let's get crazy here with the Cubs. That would be pretty wild, and we'll see what happens in the next 10 days. Eddie Olchuk coming up. Confirm or deny later this afternoon. PJ Carlissimo, Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Eddie Olchuk will join us in about 10, 15 minutes. We'll get to some confirm or deny later this afternoon.
Love that. Done it once.
Do you like confirm or deny?
I do. It got a bit out of control last time. I felt like it sort of wobbled me into the ditch for a bit.
All right. Well,
just being honest.
We'll try to keep it on the straight and narrow today.
It was my fault. But
okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad. Hey, listen, sometimes you have to recognize that.
That's all I mean, but
take it on the chin.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, don't say that to me, but okay.
Have you been tracking the Bezos and space stuff and
how happy
he is to be up there?
You know, first of all, let's be clear that this was a suborbital, right? This was not an orbital flight. This was the high sky.
Okay.
Human beings have been doing this for 60 years now.
So you're not impressed, is what you're saying.
I think, to be perfectly honest, 100 years from now, historians will say, during that time of unprecedented political and racial upheaval with the environment being such a major issue, what did the three richest Americans do at that time? What were they doing about it? Shooting themselves into space. Well,
yeah.
Richard Branson's not an American, but I just... Like, this has been done. We had Alan Shepard. We had John Glenn. Like, we've gone to them. Like, these guys aren't doing something that hasn't been done a lot. So I'm not sure what the
appeal is. I'm not sure what drove this.
And by the way, I got to say this. The Bezos spaceship brings back Austin Powers vibes, does it not? Seriously, you couldn't design something less
Yeah, it looked a little goofy.
I'm going to say it. It's a word I've never said on any air before. It was quite phallic.
Yes, it had that type of vibe.
I've never said that in a hockey broadcast.
It had a mojo. Yeah, it had a mojo.
It did have a mojo to it. And so where are you on it? Like,
I couldn't care less what this guy's doing. Like, space, it's not my thing. Like, I don't, you know, they're showing pictures and video. Their video was grainy. You couldn't really see anything. It's not.
Hey, like, listen, if
something
I could,
that intrigues me.
If
that
I could
much.
Do one thing in my life, I'd like to go into space. I would love to go. If you said,
would it scare the hell out of you?
No.
Why not?
Well, it's pretty safe. I mean,
how safe is it? You're up in space. I mean, anything goes wrong, you're toast.
99% of the people who have gone have come back safely. So
How many people have gone? That percentage isn't so great when there's
hundreds of people. Hundreds of people have gone into space.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, I got no problem. But anyway, I just think, look, they can do what they want with their money and their time and anything
else. Of course.
But I think it's better. Read the room a little bit. This is this is not what people in these times want.
I think specifically with Amazon, because this was a quote he actually had earlier today. Bezos said, quote, he wants to thank every Amazon employee and Amazon customer because you guys paid for all of this, end quote. That could not be more tone deaf because Amazon is bigger than ever. You can't get that cat back into the bag. Everyone's been stuck at home ordering through Amazon for 18 months. They are bigger than ever. He's richer than ever. He's richer than any American ever, arguably.
Richest man in the world.
Yeah, and he's got to go up to space, and all of you cronies are paying for it. That stings a little bit, but am I still going to use Amazon? I am. So what kind of protest am I really making here? Hour 2 coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.